All right. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Nick and Gary Get Serious About Jokes. I am Nick.
Hey, I'm Garrett.
Hey, what's going on? And we are ready to just talk to y'all a little bit about comedy and joke writing and how it ties in to, you know, the way we see things from the perspective of two local comedians in the Middle Tennessee area. As always, we're sponsored by Eastside Legal LLC. Eastside Legal LLC, if you have questions about legal law, criminal law, bankruptcy law, legal law, I meant family law, bankruptcy, or criminal law, the lawyers at Eastside Legal can help you. If they cannot, they have enough connections where they can refer to you someone who can. And we are also brought to you by Cardin Illustration for your prints, logos, anything drawing related, artist at Cardin Illustration can help you. They are finishing up a project for the Ryman today, and so I think they may have a couple of openings if you are interested. That is Cardin Illustration at cardinillustration.com. All right, now that we got that out the way, let's talk a little bit about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. You finished season one. Late last week?
Yeah, I think I watched the whole season in like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did finish it, and I was super excited to talk about it here because I really enjoyed it quite a bit, actually. What did you think about it?
I loved it. I thought, like, my sister is the one who texted me about it when it first came out, and I thought she had just got the wording wrong in her text because it sounded like such an outlandish premise. And so I went on Amazon Prime and looked it up, and I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And I was kind of skeptical because I'm not a huge fan of 1950s, like stories set in the 1950s, because I know that I would have been excluded from a lot of the things that are happening, you know. So I've just never gotten into the closest I got into 1950 stuff was Mad Men, and even that I didn't love, you know. So but I knew, since I was like, okay, it's about stand up, I'll check it out. And they the show begins with stand up, or with, you know, with speaking in front of a crowd. I think this is at their wedding. And then you're just thinking, oh man, this is going to be something I can get into. And I think, like a lot of comics I've talked to, it's just something we really like. It hits on all the notes that, as a comic, you want to see get hit on. I mean, there's a lot about otherness on the show, like, not just being a woman, but being Jewish and sort of fitting in this New York society that accepts you, but only in a certain way. And I like that because I feel like when 1950s or things set in the 50s deal with otherness, it's not done in a subtle way. It's almost always done in this sort of over the top.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's like, there's gotta be this sort of lesson with it. And I like that was an aspect of the show, but there were other aspects. There were other parts of the show as well. So,
it's almost like that, you know, it touches on like the otherness and like a bit of exclusion and like, you know, how limited her options are just being a woman in that time, but it doesn't like fix it. You know, it like, it's a show set in that time, and obviously there's nothing she can do about it. So it's just like her navigating those challenges, but it's not like it's gonna, like you said, it's not gonna have this huge message. It's just like a thing that existed.
Yeah, and that's what I think makes it work, because I mean, it expects the audience to be sophisticated enough to where they don't have to beat us over the head with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think shows that assume their audience is sophisticated and thoughtful. I think with streaming shows, they're going to have a longer life. I feel like on network shows, they sometimes get canceled before they can really get the momentum. But something else I liked about the show is the cast. I love Tony Shalhoub. I loved him on Wings. I loved him on Monk. He was in the Denzel movie, The Siege. So he's one of my favorite actors.
Is he the dad?
The dad, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I liked him a lot.
He's always he's just such a versatile actor. And I also liked Alex Borstein. I think that's her name. She's the agent. She's Ms. Maisel's agent. I loved her when she was on Mad TV. And I like this. I like that she's in the film or the film in the show in a prominent way. And so those are the two things that I like the two characters or the two actors. I was when I saw that them on screen for the first time. You know, yeah. Created even more momentum for me and more excitement for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, honestly, it's a pretty great cast in general. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time thinking of someone that I didn't think did a great job, but I really did enjoy the guy who played her dad, and like just the and obviously the person who played Miriam I thought was excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's interesting to me because has this sort of larger than life personality where it's like she's like confident and driven and very intelligent and bright. And which is great, but I feel like a lot of shows that have a titular character or have a main character, I guess I mean, they'll rely on that too much. Where it's like, look at this cool character, and look at all these other normal people that are boring. And for the show to be interesting, it has to maintain focus on this one interesting character. But I don't feel like that's the case with Marvelous Mrs. Maisel because she is kind of like a larger than life character. Or at least is very, like, energetic and driven and interesting to watch. But all the mm-hmm. characters she's surrounded with, most of them are pretty interesting in and of themselves. So, you know, you can focus on, you know, the family, on other characters. And it doesn't feel like you're waiting to get back to the main stuff. It also is, like, interesting. You know, I really enjoy seeing how she interacts with, you know, her parents and... you know, with their friends and how their family, like, handles this embarrassment of her separating with her husband. And it's all super interesting, so it never feels like I'm waiting to get back to the main thing, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. I like that you use the term titular. For those of y'all listening, it just, if you don't know what it means, it's like the character who the show is named after or the work is named after. Mm-hmm. I do like that she is not the only interesting character. That it seems like everyone who has a major speaking part on in the show has some nuance to them, has room to grow. And I like that we're starting to see more of these ensemble casts where – you know, you have obviously the three or four main characters, and then you have those characters who aren't in every episode. But then, even when those characters show up, you see that there's thought and complexity to them. You know, not just from the writer's perspective, but from the perspective of the audience. Like we could see the Lenny Bruce character, who obviously is, you know, was a real life comedian and. Has his own sort of history and background. You could see if they wanted to, they could do an episode that just focused on him, and it would be, you know, it would be interesting, and I feel like it could work in a way that maybe if this show were done 5 years ago, it would, you know what I mean? It wouldn't go over as well.
Yeah. And speaking of that character, like. The whole thing he gives about comedy, about, like, how terrible a job it is, I feel like at that point was when I was, like, really hooked in the show. Because mm-hmm. it's just, like, a really, really cool scene.
Yeah. You're talking about when they were at the police station?
Yeah.
Because it is. There is something about comedy that is... you know, very enjoyable. But at the same time, you know, and within 24 hours, you can have, like a letdown, you know, a huge letdown. And it's, it has a volatility to it that you, that we try to avoid, as you know, in our lives. Like, we try to have some sort of stability, not necessarily, I'm not even talking about financially, but just from a day-to-day basis. But there's something about the highs and lows that are both exhilarating can be very, disappointing as well. And they come on the heels of each other. And that speech really caught it.
I think another really great moment for me was, I think it was around like the third episode, and it was like the third time she had gotten up and performed, and it was getting to this point in the show where like she would get up and just do amazing every time. Mm-hmm. And so it was getting a little bit like, you know, this is, it gets a little boring when it's like they never fail. Mm-hmm. And she gets up and just completely bombs. That, to me, I thought was really great, especially when just the conversation she had with, what's her name? Her agent, afterwards, about, like, bombing and how she's just never going to do it again, and explaining to her, like, how that's just part of the process, and that's literally every comic has done that, I thought was really interesting, especially with the parallels of, you know, that's what caused her whole falling out with her husband, was him bombing and him mm-hmm. not being able to, you know, sort of accept that that's a part of it. And so her rising above that and being able to keep doing it is an interesting showing of like growth and how she's like surpassed her husband in a lot of ways. I mean from the start she was already funnier than him because she had her own material, but it's interesting to see that growth as well.
Yeah, the two things that I think the show does a good job of from, you know, a comics perspective is, did you sense in that episode that she was getting ready to bomb? It crossed my mind. I was like, I feel like she's going to bomb. I remember thinking that to myself. I mean, I wouldn't have put money on it.
Yeah.
But
I was kind of hoping.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was kind of hoping. And then, like, when she was, like, sort of rushed up there, and as soon as she started and she was, like, flustered, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I know what's going to happen. But before, I don't know that I expected it. It was more something that I kind of hoped. See, it was something that it was on my mind of, like, it's kind of annoying how she always does amazing. That's what I was thinking. And before, and then she gets up and bombs, and I was like, that's exactly what I feel like her character needed in that moment. So I thought it was great.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, like, action, like almost like a 90s action movie where, like, there's a character who beats up everybody, and then it like the character almost has to lose to someone before they can take their training and their skill level to the next, you know.
Right.
It was good because I'm gonna rewatch it this summer. I can't remember everything, but it seemed like she was doing some things differently that she doesn't normally do before the set, right? Mm-hmm. Like there was, I can't quite remember everything about but I remember thinking that like there was like a sense of overconfidence that was creeping into her, you know,
like kind of walking up expecting the laughs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's been successful every time she's gone up, and then like having to, and then failing that. And then there's just me reverse anxiety of like, oh my god, people aren't laughing, and then she's like speeding up, running through her jokes, so then the jokes aren't funny because the timing's off, and then she's more anxious because those jokes didn't work, and mm-hmm. it just all compounds into this, you know, really anxious driven like scary moment, I guess.
Yeah. And it is like I think the first time you're on stage and you realizing you're bombing, It is a very surreal experience. And I'm not even talking about like the first time you're ever on stage, because people do, you know, differently, but you don't necessarily think I'm bombing. But when you've kind of been doing it for a while and you feel like you've reached a hurdle, like, okay, I can do this. I've got some, and then you bomb, and that feeling of, oh, wow, what's going on here?
Yeah.
the show really captured that feeling, like,
yeah,
because I mean, there was that sense, yeah, there was a sense where she's just like, I mean, she jokingly says something about the mic, then she, you know, and then you're kind of wondering, maybe it's the audience. Like, there's that moment where you think, well, maybe the audience is being crazy. Maybe it's not just me. You know, like, all of these things kind of go through your head, yeah, at warp speed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't want to accept, like, maybe I'm just not funny tonight.
Right.
So it's like, wow, tough crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people are like, just be funny. And you're just like, ah, wow, I feel like shit.
Yeah, I
definitely agree. I think they captured that pretty well of, especially, like, just, like, the growing, like, nervousness that she has. She gets up and she, like you mentioned, is really confident, and then things don't work and she's a little bit like, okay, thought that was going to go well, and then that makes her a little bit nervous, and then it sort of compounds and is like the snowball effect where eventually it's to the point where it's like, oh my god, this is a disaster.
And, yeah.
And she goes down and she's like mortified, but really the best way to handle it is just to not even take it that seriously. You know, it's just kind of, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, most people who get up and do comedy, like, care about it. They want to be funny. But when you bomb, it's like, just learn from it, but can't let it get to you.
Yeah, yeah. You can't care so much that the bombing destroys you, or the lack of laughter destroys you, because
you won't
be able to last too long. It'll drive you crazy.
Exactly, exactly.
I think
they did it well with Joel's scene when he bombs, and just the way that, like, he'll, I'm beating a dead horse here, but, like, just the way that, like, it compounds and, like, progressively gets more and more nerve-wracking to the point where it's like, okay, this is not going well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that when you're a comic, especially on stage, there has to be a composure to you, even when things aren't going well. You know, you can't control everything, but you can control yourself. And I think if there is an inability to do that on stage, and it becomes, you know, too apparent, it's oftentimes a good indication that you don't know. You know, maybe it's an indication that you shouldn't be there. You know, I'm not talking about not being funny or forgetting your jokes or anything like that, but just, if you can't remain in control in this very controlled environment that is set up for you to be the center of attention, then that's an indication that you shouldn't be doing it. And
Or need to get better.
Yeah, you need to get, yeah. And well, and, yeah. And I like a couple things that I liked about it is there's this really good book by Cliff Nesteroff called The Comedians. And it's like a history of comedy in America, or at least from the 20th century till now. And I remember there being a section about how there is this transition from comedians freely stealing each other's jokes, each other's materials, and it was fine. It was just something you did. And there was this transition during the 60s where it became apparent that you had to write your own, you know, because of television and people recording albums.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and so it seems like it hits a little bit on that idea where her husband's like, you know, I stole Bob Newhart's material. What's it? Everyone does it. You know, to this idea of, you know, and you're seeing a lot with the internet too, like, you can't just steal someone's picture and try to pretend it's your own, or steal someone's meme and try to, you know, you have to give proper credit or come up with your own stuff. And you're starting to see that with comedy then. And, you know, she represents, I think there's like almost a representation of, you got to do your own stuff. If you want people to laugh, you can't tell a joke that was written for someone else. I mean, unless that comic is just like you, it's not gonna work. You know?
I didn't know that was a thing. So when, like, Joel is saying it in the show, like, you know, everybody does it, I was like, I just thought he was like a hat. So it's interesting to know that piece of comedy history, I guess.
Yeah.
But one interesting thing that, like, kind of made me cringe. I don't know. And tell me what you think about it, because you might feel differently. But it made me kind of, like, pull back a little bit, was when she was doing her set about the other comedian, the woman, who was, like, basically, like, kind of like faking and having this character and being really pretentious and
rude.
And like she's like going, oh, it's a fat suit, and like revealing like her secrets. I feel like that to me was like, oh my God, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like she's totally right with everything that she's saying, but it's like from the perspective of like she's trying to do this as a career. It's like, oh my God, please, like you shouldn't do that. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I like how that was done too. Where you get that behind the scenes where it's like the showbiz person who sort of discovered a gimmick and kind of realized that it's all a game, and then is playing the game, and then it was definitely uncomfortable for me too. I mean, there was that sense that she being Mrs. Maisel, didn't know that she was doing it. I mean, Miriam, I think she didn't know. I mean, she was aware of what she was doing. I don't think she realized the implications of what she was doing.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was, a nice little plot twist that, I hadn't, expected her, and it kind of adds another layer that it's not just about her becoming a comic, but her actually making it in and understanding show business. I don't know. I wasn't thinking about that scene, but that's an interesting sort of a development in the story. I'm wondering how they're going to deal with them getting blacklisted.
I think it's a smart move, like, from a story writer's perspective. But I was completely pulled in, just as a viewer, where, while I'm watching, I'm not thinking about, why this makes sense to add a level of resistance to her rise as a comedian. Like, why that makes it a better story. But while I'm watching it, I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. And it makes sense, totally makes sense, like, when you think about it. But I think it's a testament to how well done it was that I'm just watching it completely going like, why would you do this?
Does was that what got them blackballed?
Like, yeah,
is that what it was?
She had the guy there that was helping her become an agent, and she had several like people from the media there to like write articles about her, because it was supposed to be her, like, she was supposed to perform, open up for the other woman comedian. Yeah. And it was supposed to be kind of like her debut.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, that's a good way to get yourself screwed. I think it's going to be interesting with season two, because they left enough strands open.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when her husband, like, hits that guy in the street, and you at the end, and you see that he's not, because you would think that he would be like jealous or trying to stifle what she's doing. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're sort of been taught in movies like this or TV shows like this, where if the wife does something better than the husband is, jealous humiliated. In a way. Yeah, he's humiliated and jealous and wants to try to stop her. And, he's probably jealous, but I don't know. It didn't seem like there was this sense that it almost seemed like he loved her more because of it, or at least expressed it in a physical way when he gets in the fight in the street. So
he almost does all of it at once.
Yeah.
Or like right after the other, because he's extremely jealous and like weirded out by it at first, and then he's her agent's name is Susie, right?
Yes, her agent's name is Susie,
and he's like, you know, talking to Susie and having this big argument, and then he's, like, defending her on the streets or whatever, and, like, beating up these guys because they insulted her. So it's kind of like he has this, it's all happening at once, and doesn't know, you know, exactly how to feel. But I think probably the defining characteristic for Joel, and he's my least favorite character in the show, by the way.
Yeah.
Is probably, like, self-destruction, because he has all these opportunities. He's got this job. He's got this affluent family. He's got this wonderful wife. And he consistently just throws away, you know, things that are good for him and things that, you know, are really nice that he has in his life. Possibly because, I don't know. I mean, I guess you have to dissect the character more, but I feel like that's a common thread that he has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that self-destruct, it's almost like, there's a theme in literature. Poe talks about it, the that self-destructive tendency that we all have on some level. And it seems like Joel has it in such a way that if he has something, like, you almost get the feeling that if he made it in comedy, he would somehow find a way to throw that away as well.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And because it was interesting, and I love parallels in films and books, where and it is pointed out that when Miriam visits Joel at at his new house, it's the exact same thing that it was the Gentile version of what he had already had. Right, like she was like pot roast. That's the Methodist version of brisk. I like how they did that. That, you know, he leaves her for someone who's definitely different, but more boring, a more boring version of Miriam, and almost seems to, you know, provide all the same things that she already did, but to a lesser degree. Go ahead, sorry.
Say that she's basically like all the things of that life are like you said, like she says in the show, is like the Gentile version of what he had, but like Penny Pam, I think, like is almost the opposite of Miriam, because she's not challenging, she's not intelligent, she's someone that's easy for him to, you know, seduce or you know, start a relationship with, as opposed to, you know, how Miriam is, because she's very intelligent, she's witty and driven and challenging, and it's almost the opposite. And we learn when they have that thing later on in the season, that he does feel very intimidated by her, and that's probably one of the largest problems he has with the relationship, is that she's so many things, and she's, you know, just one of those people that you're just like, why are you so talented and interesting? And it makes me mad. He has that problem, and that's, you know, one of the things the big problem he has with her comedy when he finds it out is like that's the thing that he thought he was going to do, and it's another thing that she's succeeding at better than him. So it's like he definitely has a strong feeling of inferiority, you know, in comparison to Miriam, and rightly so, because he's the worst, but, you know.
And you see sort of the things that she does to kind of go out of her way to almost, like, not make him feel that way, like the, and this is a very, I wonder how dramatized this is, but I'm sure there was a little bit of this in the 1950s, where she wakes up before he does, puts on makeup and looks a certain way so that when he wakes up, she looks, you know, as if she didn't just wake up. You know what I mean? Like that. And so, which further makes her endearing. I mean, she doesn't sort of lord her superiority over him. It's just sort of present. And It seems as if everyone's kind of aware of it, but doesn't actually acknowledge it. Like that elephant in the room that everyone's trying to pretend is irrelevant. So,
yeah. Irrelevant?
Yeah, but I apologize. I just think that going back to Tony Shalhoub's character, her dad, it seems like he senses that. Like, he knew Joel wasn't good enough for her. And I love that they have this relationship that they get each other. He knows how special she is, and they have this, you know, interest. They have this nice little connection.
Show. I agree.
And
totally.
I think maybe even more than the Miriam Susie connection. I love Miriam's relationship with her, with her dad, just because it's, you know, they keep in the secret from the mom,
Yeah, it's really a great relationship, and I completely agree with you. And it's really interesting to see how, you know, at the start he's telling her, like, you have to get him back. And, you know, he's just blaming her really aggressively. Like, you picked this weak person, and I told you he was weak, and this happened, and it's your fault that he cheated on you, and all these things. And, like, you kind of have to look at it, you know, going back to, like, having a sophisticated audience or an audience that can be aware of the time that this was set in and look at, you know, how things were and how difficult it would be for her to, you know, support herself without a husband. And mm-hmm. you can see sort of his reasoning of, like, wanting to make sure his daughter was well taken care of. But then, like, later on, you see when he's talking to Joel and he's like, you idiot, like, you're not going to find another person like Miriam. And, like, it's interesting because you can see, like, he still is this sort of rigid, sort of hard-headed intellectual, but he's also a very caring person in his own way. So I think that, you know, the way they handle that character was very well done.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. I wouldn't mind a whole episode that focused on him, you know. It is. I like the one part where he goes, I told you to make sure. And then she was like, what talk? What are you talking about? And she's like, he goes, remember I asked if you were sure? Like, it was something like that. It was like he asked her one question, and then that was like his idea of warning her. You know, that was hilarious to me. Like, and you could kind of see that. Maybe that gap in communication between not just generations but genders, where you know, maybe during that time, if a dad says to his son, "Are you sure?" everything is understood, but there may have been something lost in translation when he says that to her about Joel. But I don't know. I don't know when season two is going to. Hold on, I'll look it up while we're.
Started filming in March.
Okay, all right.
Because I immediately looked it up and I was like, when is this happening? And I think, I'm not sure if there's a 2018 release date, but they have started filming. So
okay, yeah. I mean, it's just talking about it. It's definitely my favorite stream show. You know, I think before this it was House of Cards, and then everything came out. But I don't know if I have a favorite, you know, a second favorite stream show would probably be F is for Family, the Bill Burr show.
Yeah, that's really good.
And other than that, I feel like I watch a lot of stand-up and a lot of, like, documentaries. And that's it. Like, I don't watch as many TV shows, even though I know that we're in a golden age of television because so much of it's being produced. And it's so good, and with streaming, there's so much more freedom. But I just have no idea where to start.
It's honestly a real burden, because it's like, why is there so much, like, legitimately good content? I'm never going to be able to watch it all. Like, I have friends who are telling me to watch 10 different shows, and I'm sure if I watched any one of them, it'd be amazing. But, like, there's so many shows. It's weird that it's almost become burdensome. yeah. the amount of content out there.
You almost wish you were like 13 again. You know, you couldn't drive, you can't work, so you have like a disproportionate, and time moves so much slower, so you have this disproportionate amount of free time to watch all of these shows.
Right.
But
right, yeah.
Would you even do it with, because I feel like with YouTube, that would take up so much time watching those videos, and those, you wouldn't even have to necessarily get to the Netflix and the Amazon. It just yeah. seems like, and I know you got to go in a minute, but Bill Simmons, the sports writer and film producer, he talks about how in 1998, Jordan retired and Seinfeld went off the air. And he was talking about, like, man, is there ever going to be good TV again? He's like this. I've just ended this golden age of television where I could watch, you know. And now, 20 years later, it's like there's so much stuff to watch. It is a burden. It's overwhelming. Like, it's just strange how you get to this point and you're like, man, there's no way, you know. Like, what are we going to do? It seems hopeless. And even though, obviously, this is just one person's perspective, but I think a lot of people felt like that on some level. And then now it's like, because of the internet, all things are possible entertainment-wise.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, I think for our back-to-back podcast, just last week doing the John Mulaney one, and now this one, it's just... it's so much easier to talk about it when we both are really, really into it, as opposed trying to maybe pull things out.
Yeah, like, what was the one guy that we watched, and he was just like, okay, and then
Theo
it was
Vaughn?
Just like, Theo Vaughn, and there wasn't like a huge connection, I feel like, with either of us to that comic, and we were just like, oh, he was...
Yeah.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah.
For 30 minutes.
Watching the clock, like, okay, it's 30 minutes. We're done.
Yeah, now you know that it wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. So thanks for watching.
Yeah. Well, what will do? You want to do Evans for Family next week?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, let's do that one. And then.
Do you want to focus on the first season? Or?
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Maybe we can.
I'll have to like refresh.
Me too.
Look through some of it.
Yeah. Again. Okay. Cool. That's what we'll do.
Great.
And all right. So, hey, we are at the approaching the 38 minute mark. So, we'll leave y'all, and we will be here next week for another episode of Nick and Gary Get Serious About Jokes. Y'all are free to go about the rest of your lives now, until of course this time next week.
Country again.
Yeah. All right. Gary, man, I will talk to you later, and good luck with the thing you've got going on later.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. All right.